I think there may be a direct correlation between my grandmother's age and me doing things later in life. If you relax into thinking that your genetics are going to let you live to be 96 years old, then you don't get in a big hurry to do things. I didn't travel internationally until I was 48 years old. Most of my friends were globetrotters from the time they were in their early 20s. They were Peace Corps, camel riding, mountain climbing, llama-loving, cultural taste testers who spiced dinner conversations with worldly experience. I grew up in a small town surrounded by rural countryside. When we discussed travel plans, it involved a grocery list and post office hours. I was content with experiencing the world through books, television, and my friends' stories. I could experience jet lag just from picking up my friends at the airport, and the thought of being slung around in foreign taxis made me carsick. When my need to travel outside the country outweighed my lack of desire to travel, I found myself applying for a passport and visa. I wish I could have started my worldly travel someplace a little closer to home than the opposite side of the globe. Working as a homeopath, I feel it is important to keep up with the most current discoveries in homeopathy, and for that reason, India was the place I needed to visit. The physicians in Mumbai are experts in the field of homeopathy. When you apply for passports and visas in your 20s, you're so busy being excited about the place you're going, you don't have time to worry about something going wrong. So, it usually doesn't. When you apply for passports and visas in your late 40s, you worry about everything that can go wrong. And so, something usually does. After registering for a very expensive seminar and making reservations for a room in a clean hotel and booking an extremely expensive non-refundable flight, I heard that there was a 4-month waiting list for international visas. I had just enough time to get one, provided I applied right away and there were no glitches. I received my passport with no problems, but the time for the trip was down to the wire, and I still had not received my travel visa. I called the Indian embassy. The lady with the nice accent told me not to worry. It wasn't until the third time that I called her that she stopped speaking to me in English, and I can only surmise was cursing me out in Hindi. Every day I hurried home from work and frantically flipped through the mail. Tossing grocery ads, clothing magazines, and phone bills aside, I would get through every envelope and my heart would sink when there was still no visa. One day I came home and found my friend John in the backyard with a flashlight. "What are you looking for, John?" I asked. Imagine my response when his answer started with, "Now I don't want you to be upset." My mouth got dry and my legs weak. "What's wrong?" I followed him into the house, and on the table was laid out what looked like a jigsaw puzzle. "What's that?" I asked as he held the small piece of paper in his hand over the puzzle as he studied it. His eyes were hurriedly scanning for its correct placement. "This?" He paused way too long for the amount of adrenaline coursing through my body. "What is it?" My heart was pounding so hard I was about to jump down his throat and pull the words out myself. "This," he paused again, "is," and in a barely audible voice, at just that moment, I noticed part of my face looking up at me from the puzzle. "Is your visa," he said. Some unknown force punched me in the stomach, and hot juices poured into my gut, swirled inside me, creating a mild nausea. Now I, too, was having trouble speaking. "What? What?" was all I could whisper. As it turns out, the delivery people hung the small plastic bag containing the visa on the fence gate that belongs to the backyard fence, the one holding in the 6 eyes that belonged to the 3 dogs that were standing by that gate staring at them. Apparently, they didn't notice the loud, incessant barking and snarling teeth just inches from their fingers as they carefully hung the package on the fence post. The dogs had never tasted an international visa, and they had a wonderful time ripping through Asia. John, hearing all the noise, had gone to check on the dogs. He found them playing a great game of tug-of-war. It didn't take him long to recognize the logo of the courier and realize the dogs were shredding something important. He retrieved enough of it to know they were eating my trip to India. We worked the puzzle into a finished picture, all but one piece, the one that obviously distinguished me from a terrorist. I called the Indian embassy and talked to the lady with the nice accent. I anxiously bit my lower lip as she laughed for what seemed like 15 minutes, and then told me she had never heard a story of a dog eating a visa. She put me on hold while she talked to someone else in the embassy and then came back on the phone line to tell me that this was the first time in the history of the Indian embassy that someone had reported a dog eating a visa. They continued to laugh at me, the inexperienced traveler, the one who thought she could use the old "my dog ate my homework" excuse for not having her visa at the required deadline. She told me I had to reapply. When I told her I didn't have time, she didn't seem to think that was her problem and wished me a nice day. I called friends who called friends and ended up 3 friends away from a senator. His secretary wouldn't even give him the message. She didn't think I was a terrorist trying to sneak my way from the USA into India. She thought I was a stupid person posing as a terrorist. Honestly, you chose the alias name of Smith? She also seemed offended that I would blaspheme a dog in my shameless scheme to travel to India to try and become more educated. I showed my ragged visa full of tape and teeth marks to the postal workers at one of the large post offices in the state, the one I was told that processed visas. They weren't sure what I should do. They suggested that I could go show it to the people at the airport to see if it would be accepted, but they followed that by saying, "But the day of the flight, you may not get the same person taking tickets, someone who may not accept it." At least they were trying to be helpful. Finally, after some research and a lot of stress, I paid a company a lot of money to go to the embassy and walk my visa through and get it back to me pronto. As it turns out, they misunderstood my southern accent and thought I said, "Get it back to me tonto," and decided they would take it via horse to the embassy instead of transporting it in a fast car. After I received what I needed from them, I had to take a bunch of papers to a courthouse that dealt with international visa problems. It couldn't be any courthouse, as only certain ones handle foreign affairs. I picked the closest courthouse to where I live. It was in the little town of Moxville, North Carolina, population 4,587 if you count the cows and chickens. Moxville is best known for having the burial site of Daniel Boone's parents. The Boones, who were Quakers, moved to Moxville from Pennsylvania after Dan's unmarried sister got knocked up by a non-Quaker. Causing insult to injury, the older Boone boy married a worldly woman. I was happy to hear that even though it got him kicked out of meeting, Dan's father stood up for his children. What I couldn't understand, though, is why after all the finger-pointing and mockery, he would move his family to a town named Moxville, of all places. Moxville hasn't changed much since the Boones were there, though they do now have the Catchy Creek Bakery. Daniel would have loved their cream horns. I told the board clerk at the Moxville courthouse my plight of the visa delivery and the dogs, and how the embassy and senators would not believe my story, and how my herbalist grandmother, not a traveler herself, couldn't understand why I was risking my life to go to the other side of the world when everything I needed was growing in my own backyard. "You said your dogs ate it?" the clerk asked without looking up. She continued stamping documents, and before I could answer, she said, "Yep, that happened to Dr. Brown, the pharmacist, over at the drugstore. Yep, hung it on her fence post. Dog ate it." Well, okay. 2 people living within 20 miles of each other in 2 small towns had their visas delivered by postal services to the mouths of dogs, and not one embassy or senator has heard of anything even remotely resembling that dilemma? Maybe we should be worried about national security. Anyway, I threw up within 10 minutes of my first taxi ride in India. I had jet lag until the day I was to return home. In India, dogs, like cattle, run around in the streets unsupervised. They belong to no one in particular, but to everyone in general. So I understood more about why the nice people at the Indian embassy hadn't completely understood my plight. To them, if you wrap a fence around a dog, it's your bad karma. My 96-year-old grandmother is about to turn 97, so maybe it's time I see Greece. I'll do things differently this trip. Not only will I hire a different mail courier, I'll hire a different company to walk my visa through the embassy. And when I go back to Moxville, to the courthouse, I'll take the time to stop at the bakery and get a cream horn. And I may even stop in the drugstore and ask the pharmacist, Doc Brown, how her dogs liked eating through grease.